the Welcome to Fatherhood podcast. I'm your host. My name is Kelly, and I'm here to remind you, however you're listening and wherever you're listening, that as dads, we're just like moms. Except we're dads. Ha ha! Thank you for coming back to the podcast. This is your second time around, so I guess I'll still ask you to introduce yourself for those who will be hearing you for the first time.
Sure. Yeah, thanks for having me back, Kelly. It's great to see you again and to speak with you. My name is Drew Vernon. I am the marketing director for Tony's USA, and I'm married. I've got three kids ranging in age from 11 to 5.
So give us a sense of what Tony's is all about. Again, just thinking of someone who might be hearing you on the podcast for the first time. So give us a little background history of what Tony's is, what is it about, all of that jazz.
Yeah, so Tony's is a toy company that started in Europe, and it's a speaker box for kids. It's a smart speaker system that has no screen. But it's figure-based. So you put a figure on top of the box and it'll play whatever types of content, songs, stories, and more. And then we also have the Creative Tonys, which are blank, that kids can kind of write their own content and stories.
Sweet. Thank you for that. So we'll obviously get a little bit more into that later on in the conversation, but just want to get a sense of what's been going on in your life since we last spoke.
Yeah, it's been a really, really busy year. So probably the biggest event for me is a cross-country move. So last time I talked to you, I was living in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. We packed up the house and we drove across the country to Salt Lake City. So we've just kind of settled in within the last month or so. And then with work, things are going really well. We're kind of getting the word out there, and, mm-hmm. and we're starting to see a lot of success getting, you know, Tony boxes into people's homes and into classrooms as well.
I was kind of following your journey from Connecticut to Utah. You were documenting pieces of it on Instagram, just taking different snapshots. And Utah has always been one of those states that I would love to visit just because of the scenery. It's always been an appealing place for me to just, every time I've seen pictures of it, it's like, man, I really want to go and visit that part of the country, Utah in particular. Was there a particular reason for Utah? Was it like more work related or just the family said, let's go to Utah?
Actually more on the personal side. So I actually grew up in Utah.
Oh, okay.
I grew up loving the outdoors. Like you said, it's a beautiful state. I was actually a tour guide in college for a lot of the national parks.
Oh, get out.
Bryce Canyon, Zion, Arches, Canyonlands. So anytime you want to come, let me know.
I'll
give you all the details. But I left Utah after school just to pursue different jobs. And we hopped around, spent some time in Wisconsin, Ohio, and then Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And really, it was COVID that allowed me the flexibility to work remotely and to, for the first time in my career, to choose where to live. So I decided I wanted to get back closer to home for my parents and my friends.
Nice. Talk to me a little bit about what the significance of that is for you in terms of being a father to three kids and just having them come back to where you grew up and sharing with them things that you experienced yourself when you were their age.
Hmm. You're always so thoughtful. I think it's for me, it comes down to this intergenerational aspect, because one of the deciding factors to move here was really for my parents, who are aging and they're kind of settling down to the last stage of their lives. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to be there for them. Mm-hmm. I wanted to show my appreciation for my upbringing, mm-hmm. And to help them as they get a little bit more fragile. But I like your question, which looks towards the future and my kids and sharing with them what I grew up doing. And I think for me, it goes back to the love of nature and the mm-hmm. outdoors and wanting to share with them kind of some of the beautiful places that I got to experience as a kid and, you know, as a college tour guide.
Man, that is really cool. There are a lot of families who are sort of in the same or making similar moves as I'm sure you and your family are in terms of wanting to be closer to parents or having parents move closer to them for those mm-hmm. same reasons. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there is something to be said about watching your children in the same setting where one was once a child, which has to be such a unique thing. You know, it's sort of like, I wonder if they will find enjoyment in the same things that I found enjoyment in. You know what I mean? Just mm-hmm. watching them in that same setting.
You know, I think there's a little bit of both for me. I think, you know, going back to an old place, you have kind of nostalgia for the way that you were raised. And I do want to share that, but I also appreciate having new experiences mm-hmm. and different experiences. And, you know, sometimes, you know, we look back on our upbringing or our circumstances and maybe not everything was amazing. Maybe not everything mm-hmm. was something you want to keep coming yeah. back to. And I think that's okay too. Like, it's okay to do better for your kids or to try to do better for your kids than you had for yourself. And I think there's beauty in that as well.
No, for sure. Absolutely. Thinking about our conversation the last time and looking forward to the conversation this time, I realized that one of the underlying things or subjects that I wish I had spoken to you then, but now I have the opportunity to talk to you about now, is the importance of spending time as fathers or parents. But since this is Welcome to Fatherhood podcast, putting the emphasis on us dads, mm-hmm. spending the time in engaging with our children, igniting their imagination through books and reading. And so if you would indulge me in having that conversation just to sort of explore why that's even a thing or why that's even important to do, how dads can get excited about spending time reading with and to their children, you know, some of the benefits of that and how the Tony's box can fit into that. What's the word I'm looking for? Initiative. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Does that sound?
Yeah. I think stories, there's a lot of value in stories. Number one, they're entertaining, they're engaging. They help us imagine a world different than our own.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important to take these in because they give us reference points. I think we talked a little bit last time about the hero's journey and mm-hmm. how, you know, a good story has a hero that overcomes a challenge to get to a result or a reward. Mm-hmm. And so with that framework in mind, the more reference points we can give to our kids, the more worlds that we can open up to them, I think the better, because they will learn how to overcome challenges and the approaches that heroes take. And it's through sharing those stories, through reading them to our kids. And, you know, that's one thing I really enjoy about the Tony Box as well, because it promotes kind of co-listening. If you want to listen to a story with your child, or in the times that you can't be there for a child, you have kind of like an engaging way for a child independently of a parent to be able to consume a story or to listen to a story and to do so in a screen-free way, which is very important as well. So I think that's how I approach the topic there.
So take me back to your childhood. What were some of your favorite books to read when you were a child, or to have read to you when you were a child?
Yeah, the two kind of at a younger age that really stood out to me. One is The Giving Tree,
okay,
by Shel Silverstein. And I'm not too emotional of a person, but if there's one thing that just can like make me just really tear up, it's that story, just the story of unconditional love and giving to the child. My other favorite was The Sneetches by Dr. Seuss. I actually just recently repurchased this book because apart from it being fun, like I actually think it's a really interesting commentary on consumerism and just the need for status and you know, keeping up with the Joneses. And,
yeah.
And so I really appreciate that story. And then as I got older, I got into, you know, things like Encyclopedia Brown and Choose Your Own Adventure and things yeah. like that.
Are there any books? So do you include, have you included those two books, your two favorite books in your children's libraries growing up? Or did you discover more interesting books, not more interesting, but other interesting books while, you know, your home was populating and you were getting books for your kids?
Yeah. So, you know, I brought, you know, kind of my childhood favorites to the family. I love reading Dr. Seuss to my kids. And you know, as I got older and bought things for the kids and kind of got into the entertainment toy industry, you know, I came across other ones like Dragons Love Tacos and Pete the Cat and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's fun to see kind of the newer stories as well for my kids.
So growing up, I don't recall my parents reading me any children's books. I do remember my mom, I grew up in a Christian home, so I do remember my mom making us memorize some of the Psalms. Okay. So we knew, me and my sisters, we knew some of the Psalms by memory very early on in our lives. But in terms of like sitting down and reading a book, that's not something that I recall. And partly because my mom was a single mom and she didn't have time really to yeah. do it. You know, for as horrible yeah. as that might sound, the circumstances where she didn't have the time or the energy to do that. Mm-hmm. So having my son, I remember just being really excited about creating a library for him. And so getting all of these books. And this was obviously my introduction to children's books. And now there are three books that I recommend to every parent that I meet. The Pout mm-hmm. Pout Fish, which is one of my favorites. The Gruffalo, mm-hmm. which is one of my, I mean, we love that book, The Gruffalo and the Pout Pout Fish. Mm-hmm. And the third one, what's the third one? The third one is, why can't I think of the name of the third one? Giraffes Can't Dance.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So those three books are three of our favorite ones to read to our son. And I mean, we also have other books in the arsenal. And it's just interesting when I'm reading or when my wife is reading to him, just to see how his eyes sort of light up. Mm-hmm. And I'm beginning to wonder, you know, how much of this is he really soaking in, or what effect any of that is beginning to have on him. But we certainly enjoy reading to him, and he's at that stage now where he has too much energy, so he doesn't necessarily want to sit and have us read to him. But still, when we mention certain things from the books to him in just regular conversation or just being silly, he starts to recognize some of those things. Like we would say to him, "You're a pow pow fish," and then he just starts giggling because he's accustomed to hearing that. Do you recall just how, in your own personal experience, reading these books, the Giving Tree, sparked your imagination in some way?
Yeah, I think if I'm being honest, I think the Sneetches in particular is partly what inspired me to go into business.
Oh, okay.
I remember my ninth grade business teacher.
Well, you had a business class in the ninth grade?
Yeah, yeah, a business class in the ninth grade. And maybe I was already predestined for it. But he introduced that book. And it's actually a bit of a paradox for me now and kind of the arc of my career. I see things a bit differently. But, you know, just from the Sneetches side, I think it's about status and wanting to have a star on your belly and, you know, wanting to be in the in-group. From the entrepreneurship standpoint, you have Sylvester McMonkey McBean, who he is just there to make a buck. And so he's pleasantly happy to give these Sneetches an opportunity to achieve status. and they go in the star on machine, and then everybody's equal. And then he goes to the other Sneetches that already had a star, and he's like, hey, well, that's not cool anymore. And he creates this. It's fashion, basically. He's saying it's not cool to have a star anymore. And he gets these guys hot and cold on having a star or not having a star. And meanwhile, they just keep shelling out the money. And so from an entrepreneurship standpoint, that's kind of what inspired me to say, hey, how do you create a need and how do you solve a need? And so I think that part of it is interesting, but I think the morality part comes in. And I do think in my later readings of the Sneetches that, you know, Sylvester McMonkey McBean did want to teach the Sneetches a lesson or inadvertently, you know, they learned a lesson, which was, you know, we're all, you know, the same at the end of the day. And it doesn't matter, you know, who has a star, who doesn't have a star. You know, we can all kind of coexist peaceably. So maybe that's more detail you wanted on the Sneetches. But it actually is a really significant book in my life.
No, but you know, you saying that is one of those things that I've been wrestling with, just sort of vetting some of the books that I buy for my son. And because I feel like there are books that just have on the surface reading is, you know, for children and it's fun, you know, it's all sorts of things. And then you read it as an adult and it's like, wait a minute, what is this really talking about? And so, and so I'm finding all sorts of feelings around that. I can't remember what book it was, but it was a gift. And then I read the book, and from the first page I started reading the book, I just got this really uncomfortable feeling. And I said, I'm not reading this book to my son. I can't tell you why. I can't tell you what it was about. I just know that I'm not going to read it. But all that to say, I think part of the importance of reading to our children is so that we can begin to teach them, or to help them at least begin to identify, or should I even say expose them to different things that maybe later on in life they'll pick up. You know, it would have been sown in them at an early age, sort of like it happened for you by reading the Sneetches.
Yeah, that's the beauty of giving someone different reference points is you show different angles of how different characters react in certain situations. And sometimes they make great decisions and they get what they want and everything is happy. And sometimes you make a bad choice and that has a consequence. So there's a cause and effect element to show what the effect of a particular path may be. And if you can get that in a story, either for good or for bad, of what to do or not do, that gives you a little bit of a roadmap or an advance on something that you might encounter in your own life.
What are some of your kids' favorite books to read? Or when they were growing up, some of their favorite books when you read it to them?
My kids read a lot. So we, you know,
they got that from you, obviously.
Yeah. So, you know, they have screen time, but we limit screen time. You know, they love playing Nintendo and things like that. But we really try to limit that to like 1 or 2 days a week. Like we don't let them do that all day, every day. So a lot of their time is supplemented and really filled by reading stories. So, you know, my kids will have, you know, like fun stories that are a little bit less educational, like things like Dog Man and things like that, or Fly Guy. And then, you know, they also get into chapter books and they read a lot of series. And so I think, again, that's a good balance too, to keep some of it light, but also to kind of read to learn.
Can you talk a little bit more about that initial balance that you alluded to between reading and screen time? Because obviously we're in a generation where screen time is the thing to do, you know, like there are underlying jokes that parents aren't raising their children anymore. It's telephones, iPads, and TVs that are raising their kids.
Yeah.
So it varies between each household for sure. Mm-hmm. For instance, in my household, we also limit screen time and we try to engage with our son as much as possible, playing, reading, outdoor activities as much as possible, you know, that kind of stuff. But for somebody else, it might be, I'm just too tired. Here's the iPad, turn on the TV, you know, let mommy or daddy catch 5 minutes, 20 minutes or so. So can you talk a little bit about that balance?
Yeah. Yeah. So pre-pandemic, you know, the general guidelines, I might've talked about this last time, the general guidelines, I think, for screen time was an hour a day for kids over two. And I think, you know, a lot of parents try to adhere to that, maybe some more than others. COVID kind of changed things where, you know, a lot of the daycares and preschools shut down, or we were then working from home.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to get our work done and kind of keep the kids busy with the screen, because that's the easiest babysitter. Not to mention, you know, the switching to remote learning. So now they're and sitting in front of a laptop for, you know, 5-6 hours a day on top of, you know, their iPads and TV shows. So I found within a couple of months of falling into that I needed to find a new normal. I needed to find a new routine where that I wasn't going to rely on that as a crutch. The reason why I take a little bit of a stricter stance on this is because I think, apart from just like the zoning out and, you know, turning into zombies, I think it's actually detrimental to the building the creative muscle in children, because while something might be entertaining when you're seeing it unfold in front of you, there's no analysis, there's no creative lift for you to visualize. And when you have a story that's read to you or that you read yourself, you have to do that creative lifting yourself to take the descriptions of the characters and the descriptions of the situations, and you piece that together in your own brain without it being given to you. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the biggest opportunity with reading, is that it helps flex your creative muscle. To be honest, that's one of the things that I really fell in love with about Tony's, and why I decided to join the team at Tony's is because I saw it as a tool, something that could help a parent remove the screen from their child, because it gives them the benefits to hearing stories or being entertained, but it does it without, you know, the screen element. And so I just find it to be such a useful tool. Like, that's why I'm so passionate about getting it into classrooms, getting it into homes, because for me, it's not really a toy for me. Like, it's a toy in the sense that it's entertaining, but I, you know, really try to show how it's a tool. It's a tool for parents to be able to use as an extension of themselves, because you don't always have the time. You don't always have the energy after a long day to spend hours and hours with your child. And so you can, you know, give what you have and then, you know, to fill in those other gaps where they may have just been watching a mindless show, you can then, you know, give them a screen-free option as well. That's also very engaging.
Indulge me in a practical mental exercise. You just brought up the example of a parent who may not have had the time, and your aim is to show parents how to use the Tony Box as a tool that they can use in order to fill in those gaps. Mm-hmm. So in a practical scenario, create a practical scenario where you would walk a parent through how the Tony Box can help that parent not only minimize the screen time for their kids, but also, you know, infuse something else into the parental relationship to help their children.
Yeah, for sure. So I think, you know, that comes down to the different types of Tonys that we have. We have content Tonys and creative Tonys. So the content Tonys are preloaded. So you put a figure on top of the box. You know, we have the Gruffalo. You mentioned the Gruffalo earlier. Mm-hmm. So we have the little figure, and the Tony Box itself is designed to not require parental supervision. So you can literally hand your 2-year-old or your 3-year-old a Tony box. They can place the figure on the box and it will take them through the entire story. They can do their own navigation of the Tony, chapter selection or track selection just by giving a little tap on the side of the box. And it's something that's very tactile for them. And so that's, you know, basically giving your child something to entertain and engage them, whether it's in the car, at home, in their bedroom, at a friend's house, what have you. They can sit and kind of have the experience autonomously. You know, if you want to further push that experience and take them from a consumer listening experience to an active creating experience, mm-hmm. that's where the creative Tonys come in, where you give them a creative prompt. You know, I told my kids the other day, because, you know, if you tell a child to go write a story, they might come back with a line or two, or they may not know where to take it. And, you know, depending on the child. And so that might or might not kind of like engage them for a long period of time.
Yeah.
I firmly believe in giving my children a creative prompt, which are certain parameters that they have to fulfill to kind of meet the need. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because I'm a marketer and I'm doing a lot of creative briefing. But, you know, I told my kids to write a song about worms the other day. It had to be 4 verses long and it had to rhyme.
There you go.
I did that not to limit them, but to give them a direction to go into. So they actually went off into the corner. They wrote, you know, 4 verses. They spent about 45 minutes getting the verses just right. And then they were able to come back and we recorded onto the Creative Tony. And now they have this Creative Tony. And sure enough, every 2 or 3 weeks, like, they'll find this Tony, they'll put it back on the box, and it reminds them of that day that they had to write a song about worms. And so it's just like a really fun thing, but it was an aha moment for me as a dad, because I realized that, number one, it engaged them for a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. And number two, it gave them an opportunity to use constraints as a launch pad to their creative imagination.
You wouldn't happen to have the lyrics nearby, do you?
I'll send you the lyrics after we finish.
Okay, so when we spoke, when we reconnected, you mentioned that there's a new development on that front with a very exciting partner. So do you want to talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, not long after I came to Tony's from my previous job, I was thinking about, you know, who can help us tell this story, and who really has the equity behind a love of storytelling and a love of, you know, promoting childhood development literacy. And immediately the first person that came to mind was LeVar Burton. Who was a childhood hero of mine. I grew up watching him on Reading Rainbow.
Yes.
And you know that, you know, you say LeVar Burton to anybody in America, basically. And he's just like this universally beloved, you know, person.
Absolutely.
Who, is just so inspiring. And so, you know, perhaps naively, I just kind of got in touch with him and asked him if he would consider, you know, being a brand ambassador for us to help us tell this story. And fortunately for us, he loved the product. He believes in our mission. And so, you know, we brought him on board and he's helping us, you know, tell this message. And I'm super excited because, you know, being able to work with him and meet him was just kind of like a dream come true for me.
Yeah.
But more importantly, we're able to put his audiobook or his book rather into an audiobook format. It's called The Rhino Who Swallowed the Storm. And it's a story that he wrote in response to kind of a tragic event that occurred. I think it was a school shooting that kind of just sat really heavy upon him. Mm. And, you know, he wanted to kind of write a story to help children deal with difficult situations and heavy circumstances. So we've got that, as well as some original kind of content dealing with additional social and emotional development. Mm-hmm. We're putting that onto a Tony figure and releasing that very shortly, the LeVar Burton Tony. So we're really excited for that partnership and his Tony to come out.
Man, when I saw that partnership, I was excited because, like you, he's also a childhood hero of mine. when I first came, I don't know if we had spoken about this in our first conversation, but when I first came to the U.S. in 95, I didn't know how to speak English in any way, shape, or form. And so part of my learning how to speak English was watching television. And it was a lot of Barney, a lot of Lamb Chop. There was this show called Kids Songs, which I absolutely loved. What else? And also, Wishbone, which was an absolute favorite show. And also The Reading Rainbow. And so every time The Reading Rainbow came on, I was just fascinated by, number one, seeing someone who looked like me and the way in which he read. Like we were talking about earlier, it just sparked this thing in my mind where I was like, okay, I can sit here and listen to this guy, you know, read for however long the show was. I don't remember now. Mm-hmm. But he's definitely someone who contributed to my learning how to speak English by just watching the show. So when I saw that partnership, I was like, oh, man, I interviewed someone who now knows this guy, which was pretty cool. So to be able to have him, like you said, believe in the mission and bring his pedigree really to what Tony is doing in order to push this effort forward, I think that's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great partnership. You know, you mentioned kind of his narration and his, he's definitely, he's honed in a skill. Like you could have him read the phone book and I'd be totally mesmerized.
Yeah, nah, that is absolutely true. Absolutely true. That show was such a great show. I mean, I don't know where it ranks in all-time television shows, but that show, such a great show.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were some of these television shows for children back then that it saddens me now that we don't have them available, you know, just sort of restreaming, if you will.
Sure.
Because I learned so much from those shows. Yesterday, I was listening to a conversation between two dads who were talking about mental health. And the one dad was talking about towards the latter part of the conversation, just sort of how to be able to begin targeting is not the right word, but encouraging young people, young men, children, really, to get in touch with their emotions, to get in touch with how to better express how they're feeling, coping skills and mechanisms and everything that we talk about now in the mental health arena with adults and how to help those who are struggling with mental health navigate their feelings and emotions and what have you. But the point that he made was so spot on in that why not begin targeting these adults before they're adults as children, right? And so reading books or developing material around that to me is like a no-brainer for the sake of engaging children to be able to begin identifying these feelings and learning how to cope with these challenges growing up. How do you see Tony playing a crucial role in that arena?
Yeah. You know, I think I used to not really draw a connection between childhood and adulthood with, you know, you have your childhood and then, you know, that's all, whatever your childhood was, it was, and then you're just an adult. But I think, you know, you have to think about it on like a path, like mm-hmm. the steps that you take and the building blocks that you have as a child directly impacts your path. It influences how you're able to move about your life and mm-hmm. the opportunities that you have, the jobs you'll have, the choices you'll make. And it's not disconnected, and we need to treat it as a crucial step, you know, that defining the trajectory of your adult life. And if you have more opportunities to learn, if you have better ways to develop your creativity and your imagination and to collect stories around you, the better it's going to be. And so that's brings you back to the Tony Box as a really crucial tool. And I want to be really clear. It's not just the Tony Box. There are other things, you know, that you can do, you know, exploring, you know, your surroundings and learning different types of games, you know, learning how to play chess. Like there's a million things that you can do. The great thing about the Tony Box is that it is, it's an instantaneous and, you know, spontaneous experience for a child that's really, really engaging, that you can give a child a Tony Box as a parent and you can open up a library to them in a very easy way. And that's going to be a crucial building block for their development, their happiness, and their ability to transition into adulthood.
So as we come to the conclusion of this conversation, what is next for, what do you see is next for, in terms of frontier that Tony wants to break into?
So there's no shortage of ideas. There are so many things that you can do. We can, you know, enhance the interactivity. We can develop all sorts of different types of content. So we've gotten into mindfulness content now with our partnership with Go Noodle. We've gotten into social and emotional development with LeVar Burton. You know, anything that can be recorded can be put onto a Tony. And so really the possibilities are endless. I think that it's worth exploring just a Tony that has messages of positivity and affirmation. And that's really interesting for me to what happens if we train a child, or maybe a child coming from a disrupted household or a lower kind of socioeconomic status, what happens if we put Tony boxes into these households with Tonys that are just talking about positive affirmation and, you know, confidence building, like what's that going to do if we roll that out on a big scale? So I'm really excited to see what comes next. I'm excited to be part of that journey. And I just, I'm really optimistic that this is going to be really big for kids.
Thank you for spending the time and conversation with me again this morning. Like I said to you the first time we spoke, I was not aware that these type of platforms were available for people to use, let alone for parents to use in order to as a tool to help raise their children. And for me, the benefit of that minimizing the screen time and but also simultaneously sparking a child's imagination, to me is such a, I put a lot of value in those two things and the way that I try to raise my son. And so to know that there is an organization who's out there that has created a product to be able to help facilitate that is pretty cool and pretty refreshing. So thank you for being a part of that and for spending time with me this morning.
Well, it's my pleasure to talk to you. I really enjoy your thoughtfulness. I enjoy your intent. I see you as somebody who's really devoted to your child, and I think, you know, we need more dads like you.
Amen to that. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate that. So if someone wanted to get their hands on a Tony Box, where can they go to find it?
You can find us at tonies.com, T-O-N-I-E-S.com. We're also on Amazon, Target.com, things like that. I really like to plug our fan community group on Facebook as well. It's called Tony Box USA. It's really just parents sharing with each other different ideas for how to use it. how to increase creativity. It's not run by me or the company. It's just a totally fan-based community.
Sweet. Thank you so much. And I look forward to chatting with you again.
All right. Thanks so much, Kelly.